Welcome, everybody. My name is Bill Leake, and
I'm Kelly Meacham from Expero.
Pleasure to have you here. One of the things we wanted to do is, since we don't have a lot of time, and you guys are a lot more interesting than we are, if at any point in the middle of what we're talking about you have a question, just roll with it. So don't get hung up on our PowerPoint, because we'll be lucky to get one third of the way through it anyway. So here's our first slide. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I think our team at Apogee is pretty fun. So I keep showing up every day. And if we ever had a chance to have you folks show up as well, if any of you are looking for jobs, send us a resume. We'd love to talk to you. I'm beginning to believe this internet thing is not a fad. There are probably a couple more years left in this whole Google, Yahoo, and MSN thing and all the other interesting sites. And a lot of people out there can use help in getting the right traffic and helping them manage the big beast of Google and a few other folks.
And I'm with Expero. Expero is a local user experience company. That term gets thrown around a lot. In our context, what it means is we develop user experiences for both complex software and complex websites. That's sort of the sweet spot we focus on. And if you look at the bottom of the slide, those are some of the methods we do to develop user experiences.
But so they have the really cool glass wall, like a police station where they can observe people without them knowing they're getting observed. So it's pretty cool stuff. So what we're talking about today is trying to have websites that not only get you traffic, but make that traffic do what you want, kind of optimizing for both man and machine, because it is a slightly different optimization exercise. And a lot of times those things, the way that SEO is typically done is actually often antithetical to usability. A couple definitional things, because you can ask five different people what's meant by search engine marketing and you'll get five different answers. So for the purposes of today, we're going to call search engine marketing both the right side of Google and the left side of Google, the paid search piece and the natural or organic search piece. So you see both sides of them there, and actually there's a local search piece as well with us on a map. Actually, local search is really easy to optimize if you ever need help with that. It's real straightforward. The crossroads between SEO and usability, good search engine marketing will drive the right users to your website. Not all search engine marketing is good, and certainly not all traffic is good. And if there's any paradigm that I would love for you folks to walk away from this room with, saying this is the way we want to be, it's that you folks want to have the right visitors doing the right things on your website, not just traffic. Traffic for the sake of traffic does not help most of us. I mean, some people out there selling CPM banners on a rate card, maybe traffic helps them short term. But fundamentally, if it's not good traffic, it's not going to help their advertisers, and eventually their advertisers are going to figure that out too. So the right people doing the right things on your website. Once the traffic lands there, then really the question shifts into the user experience and the usability, and that means keeping the visitors engaged, meeting their expectations, paying it forward, satisfying their goals. And if you satisfy their goals, and a lot of times, what goes around comes around, they will help satisfy your goals. One of the ways to measure that is paid conversion. Just a couple high-level stats. 88% of websites, nearly 90%, are initially found through the search engines. And most websites fail to engage their visitors in a meaningful and compelling manner. And by that I mean people hit their website and bounce right off again, doing nothing. So talking about SEO or organic search, the natural side of SEO, it's a balancing act between trying to convert people to come to your, or converting people on your site and having a high ranking on the search engine so you get a lot of traffic. One of the big myths in SEO, and we can talk more about this if we get to a Q&A side, or if you want to ask questions, feel free to roll with them, of SEO is that it's all about what you say on your web pages. If Google did nothing else, the really big powerful thing they did is they said it's not so much you blowing your own trumpet on your own web pages anymore. It's how the rest of the web is voting for you, how they're linking to you, how they're talking about you. Most of what drives Google on any competitive keyword is how the web is linking to you. And so the SEO industry is still far too caught up with horrible concepts like keyword density ratio, where you've got failed writers who for $15 an hour are getting resold by an SEO firm at $150 an hour to deliver new bad copy to you every month. copy that is guaranteed to A, probably not get you the placement you want, and B, if that blind pig gets lucky and ranks well and someone actually comes to that website, that copy is so horrendous, it's going to scare people away and hurt your brand. So don't get suckered in by the, oh, we'll write new copy for you. SEO copywriting is generally not a good thing and a thing of the past. You don't need a lot of that. Put your keywords in your title tags. Have a keyword density ratio greater than zero. In other words, use it once or twice. Put your keyword in your meta keywords file because Yahoo cares about that. Google doesn't. And then most importantly, write for your users. Write good copy. Not SEO copy. Write good copy for your users so they do what you want. And let your links, let the rest of the web drive your rankings. But keyword in the title tag, most important thing. That's what's going to drive Google. Yes, sir. Yeah, totally irrelevant. And it switches from month to month.
Did you guys hear the question?
Okay, so the question was that whole 4% ratio that people go for is basically irrelevant. It can help you on a long tail keyword that no one else is optimizing for. But roughly, Google is 80% off page, stuff you don't control directly, links. And 80% blowing your own trumpet, or 20% blowing your own trumpet on page. Of that on page, of that 20% that's on page, and I'm leaving out some things like age of domain and some other factors, and I'm assuming that your links are aged, but of that 20% that's on page copy content stuff, about 40% of the 20% is your title tag. About 30% is a whole bunch of other tags, and at least using your keyword once in your copy. And maybe 30% of the 20% is getting lucky that month and hitting keyword, you know, the keyword density ratio that Google happens to have that month dead on. So that's 6% of what drives SEO. 20% times 30%. My industry spends 95% of their time wrestling with that 6%, delivering really bad copy to users who then do not have a good experience on your web pages. I'd rather not bring somebody there if they're going to have a bad experience. So at some point in some competitive keywords, if you're trying to optimize for mortgage or insurance or real estate, sometimes you actually get to the point where you have to worry about that last 6%. But that's not most of us. And so what I advise folks is focus on the 80-20s first. Focus on the stuff that drives the good traffic and doesn't mess up your content. And that Google has been great for usability. Because Google, you know, the old Alta Vista and web crawler days, it was all on page. Google, by moving rankings off page, has freed up people to write for their customers. They no longer have to write for the engines. Just put it in your title tag. Nobody looks at the title tag. That doesn't affect usability. You know, put the keyword once or twice on your page. But yeah, it's the 4% ratio. That's even wrong. The last I saw was about 3.2%. And even that, by the time someone figures it out, it's 3 months old. And it's changed again. So you're kind of chasing something in a rearview mirror. Anyway, I'd like Kelly to talk a little bit about how you write content for users.
Basically, writing content for users. One of our founders, John Morcus at Expero, actually, if you Google writing for the web, you will find his name, John Morcus. Some of the things we're talking about here actually in Bill's world work for search engine spiders as well. Basically, by writing content to be read by people, not search engines, what we mean by that is we have clients come to us that do things like the word Italian villas is 10 pages on or 10 links on the site. That's not particularly useful. That's not how people read. Write in inverted paragraph style. Put the most important content at the beginning of each paragraph. Break up your text. Make it scannable. So those are some of the things that help for usability and also help for search engines.
So one of the things about organic search or SEO or natural search, three words to use the same to describe the same thing, is people can come into your website from anywhere. And so pages on your website that are not dedicated pay-per-click or other e-marketing landing pages, you need to make sure that there's a little bit of content and context on every page so that the users can orient themselves when you're writing for users, because SEO traffic could enter on any page of your website. And then don't create doorway pages or orphan landing pages for SEO. Those don't make good sense. They typically don't work well. If they look like duplicate content, you might also get penalized for it. Paid search is actually kind of different here in that, and pay-per-click or paid search, the right side of Google, you can have a great impact on who's arriving at a particular page. So you can hyper-optimize your landing page for a particular discussion with your users. And you don't need as much content. You don't need as much links to other parts of your website. You can really focus on the types of users you expect to see from those sets of keywords or key phrases that you're buying. And you can do a whole bunch of testing on optimizing the conversion rate.
So again, knowing the audience is key to writing a good ad, one of the things that plays out in usability and still plays in paid search is understanding who your users are, understanding the words that resonate with them. User personas are a good tool for that. We're going to show you an example of sort of a famous example of where not understanding personas actually penalize somebody. Understand the user's mental models, understand what they're trying to do and what their goals are. That's still going to help you with paid search. And it's going to be a good starting point for you to then take that data and loop into the live testing, the live A/B testing.
Okay. Well, here's a case study on that.
How many of you are familiar with Jacob Nielsen? I don't know if you've all seen this particular study he did, but he purchased the keyword requirement specification and got zero hits. He got a click-through rate both in Europe and the USA of zero. And in fact, the real problem was he sort of wasn't drinking his own Kool-Aid was one of the problems. He bought the keyword that didn't resonate with his user population. He actually changed the keyword and did much better.
And this is a real issue. You've got to, you're actually trying to optimize multiple conversion rates, but clearly if nobody's coming to your website, you're not going to have much of a conversion rate on your website either. So
I actually think one of the issues here, if you look at requirement specification, and this is just a guess, I don't have the data behind this, is that people that are into requirement specification may want more specificity on ROI. And I think maybe he missed out on his personas a little bit here by not addressing ROI anywhere.
So one of the key things, once they come to your web page, once you've run the right paid search campaign, they're on your web page or you've done your SEO correctly, then they get to a landing page. I'm a big bigot and fan in favor of web analytics. Put something on your web page. You don't necessarily need to tag every single page on your website, but tag the pages that people are likely to enter on and tag the page that says, thank you for filling out my form or your shopping cart checkout page. And those two pages alone at least are going to give you the 80-20 you can start to work with so you can baseline what is the conversion rate of my website. And then you can start to measure all of your campaigns, not based on traffic, but based on people doing something that has, you know, provable value.
When customers come to us, sometimes one of the questions is people are partway through a process and they're dropping off. We'll always ask about web analytics. And the numbers are very useful for us to determine a starting point for research methodology. So if users are dropping out on page 3 of a cart, then there's a focus area. And we always want to know that. So the analytics are really good at determining the what's happening, but not the why or how to fix it. So that's a starting point, but you really need research to help you figure out how to change what's happening and make it so that users are going to continue to convert.
Then when users leave, it's generally because your page did not meet their expectations, which is another reason here in the ad copy, you actually want to set the stage for what they're going to find on the next page as well. Because if they read something here and they don't find it on the landing page, they're going to have a very short and unpleasant visit. Because especially in paid search, you've paid for that. You're going to have the unpleasant experience. They're just going to hop to the next page on the web because that's really easy to do.
Okay, these are some of the guidelines for increasing conversion on landing pages in particular. One of the things that we see a lot, for example, is maybe in long pages, you have calls to action below the fold. Sometimes in certain circumstances, we would recommend duplicating them both above and below the fold. There may be some other things around location specific to your audience and your personas that you can do. The next 2 points I'm going to give you an anecdote for in just a sec. Promoting trust and credibility is huge. And with certain audiences, particularly slightly older audiences, baby boomers, it's even more of an issue. You want to test landing pages that aren't converting with a small group of users. We talked about this already to understand why they're not converting. We actually had a client that had an extremely successful direct marketing business that was moving to an online channel, and they were getting drop-off partway through their cart. what ended up happening related to that HackerSafe logo was they decided that it was more important to have 2, 3, 4 security certifications on a page. This was an older population. They understood VeriSign. When we observed them in our facility, actually walking through the checkout process, this was over 55 to 80-year-olds in this instance. They saw HackerSafe, and they said, oh, I've never thought about hackers before. Maybe I don't want to finish this transaction.
I remember reading about hackers somewhere. Oh, wow. Well, they might be out
so
there.
So VeriSign even was now. Very familiar to them. Actually, HackerSafe, this one icon that was meant to be credibility enhancing for that audience, was destroying credibility and stopping users in their tracks. That's the kind of thing that we couldn't have predicted with any guidelines. We had to watch those users walking through the process and understand that was a huge deal for that audience.
And since then, I think Expero was one of the first to figure it out qualitatively, but there actually have been some quantitative studies on some of the brand names. And that's, you know, HackerSafe has a great product, and I am not a branding advisor. I'll be the first to admit that. But if they came to me and asked, do we have the right name, I might suggest, based on the data of what it does to conversion rates, maybe not. Here's a sample landing page. This one, by the way, converts at 18%. So this is at a 18% of clicks to forms filled out.
Okay, Alan, you just made a comment. Do you want to say it again?
It's way too busy. If I wanted somebody to fill out this form, it would, you know, if it meant anything to me, it would be laid out quite a bit different, and it would not have 7 or 8 of those buttons on there and all the different links.
Okay, that's a great comment. Did you hear what Alan said in the front? That he said the page was too busy. The 7 to 8, I think you mean the bullet points on the side?
Yeah, that looks like a navigation.
Actually, in terms of user research, this is actually somebody that's Bill has worked with in the past. And one thing that we found over time is that we are often telling our clients they need to add more benefit statements to forms. You know, there's this thing that probably in 10% of our clients, they're asking users to subscribe to something, to join something, and they're not providing any features and benefits information for the user. So why am I going to join? One of the things that we see on a monthly basis, if not more, is asking people to subscribe to newsletters or email and not telling them the frequency with which they'll get it, what it's going to contain, how do they unsubscribe, and note something else here, that they have a link to the privacy policy. So there's a lot of things here that from a user research perspective in terms of best practices guidelines are appropriate. We constantly get no features and benefits around sign-up forms.
Now, the good point you made, though, is that if this had been a form on the general website from people who are coming in from SEO, you probably would want a much cleaner and simpler form. This is a dedicated paid search landing page. And if you look at it, doesn't have a lot of links out. You can't escape this thing. So if there's going to be a selling event, it has to occur on this page. And that's why it has the benefit statements. If you've made these benefit statements and even wrapped some text around them in the broader website, you might, since you've got a click path of several pages, you might ultimately have a somewhat lower conversion rate than the 18%. You will have a lower conversion rate than the 18% on this form, but it'll be SEO traffic. It'll be very cost effective, and you know, the credibility factor will be high. So again, your forms and your usability also differ a little bit by what kind of traffic you're bringing into the website. In fact, where it gets complicated is 18% is a phenomenally good conversion rate. It's marketing Sherpa Click Z quality, better than actually most of their studies. There are still things that can be improved about the form, but actually the ironic thing here is this conversion rate is way too high because the goal is to get them on the phone. And maybe 1/6, 1/7 of these people ever actually get reached to a phone call. Do you see a phone number on this form? So actually, if you're trying to get people on the phone, if that's really where you want to go, you want to de-emphasize the form and you want a big honking 800 number there. And you want to be doing usability testing on, does an 800 number do better than an 877 or an 866? And those sorts of things. So one of the interesting things here is your form needs to follow, to some degree, the kinds of traffic you're bringing. Now, paid search is phenomenally profitable for these folks. They have a proven ROI all the way down to sale, and they're spending, I can't tell you the amount, but it is multiple tens of thousands a month profitably in pay-per-click. And this is a form that's designed for pay-per-click. But your form for SEO can and should look different, the main ones on the website.
Let's stay a minute longer on this. One little thing that we found is that you notice there's a link to We Respect Your Email Privacy. It's great sometimes to have a link. It's also okay to do a short statement on the page so that there's no full privacy policy. That's another accepted alternative, again, to keep traffic kind of trapped on a page.
And you were telling me earlier that for some reason, Better Business Bureau tests extraordinarily well in terms of credibility. So in terms of advising clients, if they ever ask who should I sign up for, apparently that one does particularly well.
And again, it comes down to knowing your audience, but in a test with different user types, different personas for different clients. In fact, users will comment positively on BBB and they know it. It's got high recognition, which again goes to credibility.
One interesting thing that's fairly fresh in the news, it's a combination of usability along several levels or conversion along several levels is going on right now with Google Checkout. So if anyone here ever run an AdWords campaign? Anyone here ever done e-commerce? I'm a big fan, at least for 2007, of Google Checkout because there are no merchant fees, and we have a number of clients that are doing 10% or more of their transactions with Google Checkout. But why I really love it is if you're spending a lot of money with AdWords and you're trying to stand out from a crowd of all the other fellows out there spending a lot of money with AdWords, this is a pretty big free boost to get that icon, that Google Checkout icon. So from a conversion and usability and credibility perspective, if you're doing e-com, getting a Google Checkout icon in your AdWords is going to significantly lower the cost of your search marketing in terms of getting the traffic to the page. Because if you're already trusting Google for your searches, a lot of these users are also going to be likely to trust the Google Checkout. They like the Google name. And
in terms of scannability, it's obviously got a big difference here.
Yeah, it stands out. It really stands out. Now, then when you get to the page, you have a whole other set of issues.
These are just points we're bringing out that there's not a lot of data that we have access to yet, general sort of usability principles. Google Checkout requires a Google account. For some users and some user types, this could be a barrier for adoption. So if you know your users aren't trafficking on Google that much, think about the user persona and think about this, if this is an appropriate technology to use.
For instance, you could design your site to not show the Google Checkout option or show it in a different place if you could tell that traffic came from Yahoo. So you can dynamically have a different page for where it's displayed.
One of the things we're concerned about seeing with this, and we actually expect to do a user research project on this in the next 4 weeks, is what do I click to check out? So I'm in Petco. This is Petco today. By the way, this is a screenshot we grabbed today. I'm in Petco. I go to checkout, and I've got Google Checkout next to checkout. Are they two different processes? Am I making a choice here or not? That's one possible issue. Users could think of it as a payment method. For example, we've seen a lot of sites and new clients right now that we're getting ready to go into research projects where they actually put Google Checkout next to PayPal. In particular, that proximity may confuse users. This case is a little better.
So we have a bunch of others, but we're not going to have time to get through it because I'm much more interested in hearing what questions you folks have. So let's just open it up. And
can you stand up so we can...
Making deals with other sites to get links. I don't know. What do you
Google is doing more and more things to change things around. I mean, one of the big changes they made in the last couple of years was, you know, really stressing age of domain, you know, how long you'd had a website on it. They also started aging links so you didn't get instant credit. So there are a lot of moving pieces in the puzzle. However, the fundamental piece of the Google algorithm is still, how does the rest of the web vote for you? And are these people who are voting for you people that Google thinks should be authority sites, that are trusted sites, and does their vote have any credence? And so if it's a local Austin site voting for another local Austin site with about an Austin keyword, that means a lot more to Google than a Portland site voting for an Austin site for an Austin keyword search. So it's a complicated algorithm in terms of how those links are structured. From my perspective, one of the most important things when you're trying to do any kind of search engine marketing is to figure out which keywords matter. And one of the places where I think the SEO industry often goes very, very wrong is that if you assume that any two SEOs are equally good at getting you ranked, the most important piece then is the front end of the project. It's which keywords. And most SEOs simply go to Word Tracker, Overture, and say, oh boy, lots of people searching for that one. We got to go get that keyword. And any of you who've actually looked at the guts of a website and analytics system and really just bathed in the data, you know, to a disgustingly deep degree, you'll notice that what people are searching on is often very, very different from what they're filling out a form on or what they're buying on. In fact, usually is different. I can get you lots of traffic for Britney Spears picks, but it's probably not going to deliver anything that any of you want in this room. So I'm actually a really, really big fan of hooking up Google Analytics or a low-end analytics tool, running a pay-per-click campaign first, put in 500 or 1,000 keywords, every single keyword you can think of, track them on conversion metrics. Almost instantly, in about a month, 10 keywords, out of that 500 keywords, 10 will bubble up to the top as the ones that are driving the bulk of the things you want, not just clicks, but stuff you want. And those are the keywords you do for SEO. So that's one of the things we're really a big fan of, is use pay-per-click as your keyword research laboratory for SEO. And then go to town on those keywords. Map them to your, you know, which one, your home page is your most powerful page. Which ones are you working there? Make sure you have those keywords in your title tags. And then go get links. You know, work the blogosphere for links. Contribute to other blogs. Get people linking to you. Paper blog works pretty well right now. I mean, there are a whole bunch of ways to go out there and get the web voting for you. You can beg links, you can rent links, you can borrow. You go to friends and ask them to link to you. You have good link bait. You build something that quality content is the best thing out there. If you have quality content, people will link to you. Make it easy for them to share that though. But it's still primarily about getting the rest of the web to say, this website's the dude. This is the one. Come here. It's not so much about you blowing your own trumpet.
I think we're being kicked out, but we'll be right outside the door to answer questions.
And if any of you would like a copy of the presentation or anything, just drop us a card.
Or
we'll get
candy.
One to you.
We'll have the candy right outside.